Sponsorship for Marketing Voices is provided by Intel, the world leader in silicon innovation.
This is Marketing Voices, featuring the fresh perspectives of industry leaders and examining the impact of social media on marketing.
Hi, it's Jennifer Jones. Welcome to Marketing Voices. And today I'm going to be talking about social media and the healthcare field and how healthcare marketers are using social media. Because I've just recently had a conversation with some people I know very well who work in the healthcare field, and they say they don't think that there's a lot of social media going on and social marketing going on in the healthcare field. So I was very happy to find Deborah Dick Rass' article, and she's Senior VP of the Healthcare Practice of Factor TG, and she'll tell us where she wrote this piece and all of that, but it delves into exactly what we want to talk about today, which is how healthcare marketers are actually using social media. So Deborah, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
So give me some sense of the two key learnings about healthcare social marketing that you'd like to share with the Marketing Voices audience.
Okay, well, what you've said is true, that there is kind of doubts out there about using social media in healthcare because there are a lot of, it's a very regulated industry, and there's a lot of doubt about how you can actually use social media effectively in that space. But there's a lot of marketers that have really taken the leap and been very successful, I believe. The thing is, though, that you have to bear in mind that there's three things you really need to focus on when you're working on in this channel. First of all, you want to create a relationship or a partnership with your patients, because talking to patients is really key, and creating an effective dialogue with them is very important. But really, you're trying to get them to talk to their doctor about your product. So there's always, you're pushing them to have that conversation.
Okay.
You need to provide an ongoing and relevant information. That means you constantly have to make it more relevant. You can't just have a static situation up there. It has to be an ongoing, it has to be very relevant to their lifestyle. And I can give you a couple of great examples of that.
Okay.
The third thing, and this is really the most important thing, is that you must ensure privacy and safety for them. And that's really important because of the disease states that these people have and the medications that they're taking. So you have to make it a safe place for them to be. So those are really very important steps for you to do.
So in terms of that kind of thing, can you give some best practice advice, given this learning that you've shared, that would be great for healthcare marketers?
Absolutely. The best sites and the best practices that I've observed use three things. First of all, they ensure that the group page has a customized look and feel, and it's very easy to navigate. It's got to look like something that you'd want to go to and not just be, you know, a place of disease information or medical information. It's got to have a very customized look. You have to use media dollars, too, to drive people. They're not going to just show up there. So you can use display ads, flyers, newsfeed targeting, those kinds of things to drive traffic to that group page. And what we've seen that really works the best is to plan on spending at least $100,000, in the six figures, over 3 months, to get enough exposure to get people there to start to create that network.
Wow, that's a lot of money for a lot of people. So these are budgets that are both for small companies as well as the larger companies, because I know you work with a lot of large companies.
Right. Well, in the spending arena, consumer spending arena, for pharmaceutical companies, that's not a lot of money. I mean, considering that last year over $5 billion was spent in pharmaceutical consumer advertising, and that doesn't really count all the search expenditure. So $100,000, yes, it is six figures, but the benefits of getting people into the social network, I think, can pay out very much in the long run, especially through compliance and persistency and the very viralness of the media.
Now, in terms of other things people ought to do, you had mentioned to me before we started the podcast that developing an effective media plan really is important as well. So what does an effective media plan include?
Well, the first thing, there's really many components, and an effective media plan in the 2.0, the web 2.0 space, can cover more things than really traditional media can. And those would include, obviously, brand awareness, audience penetration, the number of impressions that you're making with your media plan. You can count the number of engagements that you have. You can talk about the total conversations that you're having, the number of retentions that you get, how many people are you converting, and the number, another thing that we're trying to track and set up as goals in this space are the number of conversations. And that, you know, kind of speaks to blogs and people that go to blogs as well.
Right. So so in terms of a company that you have worked with, you could share with the audience, can you give us some sense of, you know, what I call case study example and what they did in when they were implementing social marketing?
Yeah, there's two examples that I think are really good. And one is Gardasil, which is the vaccine that comes from Merck that prevents cervical cancer. And they created a social network that I think is really fantastic. But one of the things that's great about it is, you know, that is targeted to young women. So, of course, it's easier for them to get people to that site. The social networking site is part of a whole overall campaign that Merck spent on Gardasil, and it was very, very successful. But I think the social networking site that they have was really fantastic. They did the things that I mentioned before. They had a very customized page. They had a wall where you could put information. They kept it very, you know, private, so people didn't feel like they were really, you know, revealing things, too many things about themselves that they didn't need to reveal. And it was very, very successful for them. It was very lively. They changed it a lot, really appealing to that audience. Another example of a really great site was done by Abbott Labs in Chicago, and they did a site called Labs Are Vital. And the purpose of their site was to actually get young people interested in being lab technicians. And so they created this network, and it had a series of contests and things about there were like CSI, the television show CSI, or Cold Case, those kinds of things that really talked about how important lab work is. Both of those sites really worked well for the completely, as you can see, completely different target audiences and completely different objectives of the campaigns. But they use social networking very effectively in both of those cases.
So now, in terms of another implementation, what about Johnson & Johnson and the blog that they had done?
Well, I think that blogs, like social networks, are an area in the Web 2.0 world that healthcare is hesitant to go. And Johnson & Johnson has done a phenomenal job with their blog, which is J&J BTW, Johnson & Johnson Between Us. And what's interesting about their blog is that it's done by their corporate PR department, and they really based it off of the history of the company, which was founded by a pharmacist who actually, 100 years ago, would write letters to all of his customers to get feedback on how he was doing. He would write letters to them, and they would write back to him. And they found all these letters, and they thought, wow, so it was like a blog, but in the, you know, 18th century blog, because it was really a two-way conversation. And they thought about that, and they started a blog as kind of an experiment, and it's turned out to be a wonderful place where they can have an open communication with their customers on a different level than a marketing level, but on a level that really speaks to the trust that consumers and patients feel for Johnson & Johnson. You know, that they have a whole brand image around trust. This, I think, helps accelerate that and underscore it. I think the real key to remember there, Jennifer, is you can't speak in marketing speak. You have to speak like a human when you're talking on a blog, you know? And I think that's one of the things that is wonderful about the social networking, because it's actually people talking to each other. And in the case of a blog, it's a company talking to people and not talking about, you know, penetration or the words that we end up using when we speak as marketers, but
right. Speak
just like a person.
Deborah, thank you so much. This has been very helpful, and I really appreciate your knowledge about the healthcare field. So I've been talking to Deborah Dick-Rath, who's Senior Vice President of the Healthcare Practice of Factor TG, and she has been talking to me about healthcare practices as it relates to the world of social media. So Deborah, thank you for joining me in Marketing Voices.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And to all my listeners, please look at www.marketingvoices.com. And until next week, may all the voices you hear be Marketing Voices.